My name is Luther Peterson. I'm a parish pastor in Minneapolis at St. Olaf Lutheran Church, and we're exploring the theme of overhearing or eavesdropping. I always have the wrong word. Eavesdropping on the creation, tuning into nature's rebellion before it's too late, listening to the Bible with echo-sensitive ears. And today we're into Genesis 6 through 9, which is the Noah stories, the flood stories. And so we're also, as we approach these Bible studies, we're intentionally focusing on what the Bible has to say to us about ecology, about the care of the earth. It's sort of like we have not really seen that part of it very much. And so it's like getting our eyes refocused a little bit to see more of what's in the scripture than we have traditionally seen in the past. And so even though there are a lot of other great things that we'll find in the flood stories, we'll be focusing mainly on ecological issues, and today specifically animal rights issues. And of course we can get into some great arguments on that. It's a very controversial sort of thing, and we have lots of extremists in that movement as we have in other movements. But anyway, that's kind of be our focus today. The prayer that I'd like to have us begin with today is another one of Herb Brokring's prayers in his little book, Lord If. And he has these little short prayers, and this one happens to focus on the flood. So let's pray. Lord, if you can pull a nation out of a raging sea, a world out of a flood, then you can pull me through, up and over. So, anyway, I got a riddle for you this morning. Puzzle. Just want to see how wide awake you are this morning. Okay, why didn't Moses take bees into the ark?
Moses.
Oh, what a wide awake bunch. You are so wide awake this morning. That's great. Well, we're going to have a good time. Let's see. Lots of Noah jokes around, of course. And I was in a Bible study that I teach throughout the year, off and on throughout the year. We have a nursing home connection with our church, and one of these ladies is 95 years old. She comes over, and she is just full of Noah jokes. She just has them all the time, and every time we start the session, I ask him, you know, do you haven't heard any good stories lately, and any jokes anybody want to tell to kind of get started, kind of get everybody in a good mood, and she's always got a Noah joke. This is one of hers. You know, Noah didn't let people play cards on the ark. Did you know that? Okay, what did Noah do to stop them from playing cards? He sat on the deck. Maybe you know some Noah jokes. Anybody remember any this morning that you want to share with us?
No.
Oh, no. Okay. Okay. How many of you read Calvin and Hobbes in the comics? Okay. Back in April, there was a comic strip that went something like this. You probably remember. Calvin says to Hobbes, his stuffed animated tiger. Calvin says, our traffic safety poster needs a catchy slogan that promotes awareness and caution. Any ideas? And Hobbes says, how about, don't look into car headlights and freeze, because you'll either get run over or shot. And then Hobbes sits back. He's so proud of his idea. Calvin thinks about it for a minute, and Calvin says, I'll check the statistics, but I don't think that happens to too many people. And Hobbes says, there's more to this world than just people, you know. Well, that one, I thought was really right on. another one a few days later. The cartoonist was really onto some animal rights stuff that right about that time. He says, Calvin says, this is a sequel. Calvin says, Mom suggested the slogan, before you cross, look each way and you'll get home safe each day. And Hobbes says, that's kind of catchy. And Calvin says, yeah, but I like my idea better. Be careful or be roadkill. And then Hobbes says, I suppose that lends itself more to your particular brand of illustration. And Anyway. Yeah, and you've probably heard about the Sunday school teacher who asked the class, you know, who's your favorite Bible character? And a little boy said, Solomon. Why? Well, because he was so good to women and animals. And, who told you that? Well, it says right in the Bible he had 500 wives and 300 porcupines. Anyway, I just couldn't resist. Anyway, we have a bibliography suggestions over there on the table, as well as outlines of the sessions that we're doing. So you feel free to pick those up on the way out. Just want to mention the fact that there are several books that have sections, chapters on the whole issue of how the Bible relates to animal rights. There's a section in Santmeyer's book, The Travail of Nature. There's Sally McFaig's book, The Body of God, in case you want to do further stuff on that. I want to mention that, just want to highlight a couple things out of Al Gore's book this morning, which just doesn't pertain specifically to animal rights, but points up how serious, again, a reminder of what a critical issue environmental concerns are. And so just to share with you a little bit here, he says, sometimes a television commercial will use slow motion films of an automobile crashing through a brick wall at high speed. The suddenness of the collision in real time makes it seem like a single immediate transformation of the car into a twisted mass of metal. But in slow motion, we see a process of change in which the various parts of the car slowly crumple one by one, colliding in seemingly logical and predictable ways with each other and with the occupants inside. The steering column, for example, may be pushed by the engine to impale one dummy, while a second dummy slowly shatters the windshield with its wooden head. What is now occurring in the global environment can be seen in similar terms. Our ecological system is crumpling as it suffers a powerful collision with the hard surfaces of a civilization speeding toward it out of control. The damage is remarkably sudden and extensive in the context of a long period of stability in the environment before the damage. But we see the destruction in slow motion. That's the way we see it. We see it in slow motion. When the Aral Sea dries up and its fish all die, for example, it is as if this fragile ecosystem is gradually being crumpled by the force of civilization crashing into it. When vast areas of the rainforest are cleared and the species living there become extinct, it is as if the forest is shattered in slow motion by the impact of its collision with civilization. And when an overpopulated nation overgrazes its pasture land, causing a collapse in its ability to provide food the following year, it is as if the force of its collision with nature has pushed it abruptly backward in a crushing blow, like a dashboard striking the forehead of a child. But most of us act as if we don't perceive a collision at all, partly because the crunching and crushing and shattering all take place over a longer time span than we associate with a violent collision. Thomas Berry, a comment from Thomas Berry in his book, Dream of the Earth. I'm just quoting these books again to stimulate your appetite for looking further into these books, because these two are the two that I have been really most excited about. There are many others too. Thomas Berry, in his book, The Dream of the Earth, says, it is the supreme irony of history that the consequences of the millennial expectations of the, you know, premillennialists, people that are talking about that 1,000 years reign and then the world, everything will come to an end and all that sort of thing. The consequences of these millennial expectations have been the devastation of the planet, waste world rather than wonder world. The idea that the premillennialists have that there will be that 1,000 years of wonderful peace when everything will be just right. Well, what's happening, he's taking a shot here at the fundamentalists and those who are caught up in premillennial kinds of things where they don't care much for the environment because they're so concerned about the next world. And he says the result of that is not going to be wonder world, but waste world. That's the irony of that. Anyway, then I want to just, by way of introduction to Noah, let's get into another book called After Nature's Revolt. Beautiful book also. Just read a couple things to you here. He's talking about wildlife sanctuaries. Now we're moving into the theme of animal rights and that aspect of care of the environment. A wildlife sanctuary is a place where non-human life is sacrosanct. That is, valued in ways that surpass not only economic levels, but even in ways that transcend resource use in the ordinary sense. In that sense, Christian conviction wants sanctuaries not only for humans, but also for wildlife. Then he says, although Christianity does not have any particular expertise in endangered species management, biblical faith does have the conviction that these species originate in God. God ordered earth to bring forth swarms of living creatures, Genesis 1. Swarms is the Hebrew word for biodiversity. Genesis also relates the first recorded endangered species project, Noah and the Ark. Whatever one makes of the flood, historically or theologically, the teaching is abundantly clear. God wills for each species on earth to continue, despite what judgments fall on the wickedness of humans. Some powerful stuff here in these books. So I'd encourage you to pick up on some of those if you want to do some further work. But with that, let's get on to the reading of Genesis. And we can't read the whole story. It's a lengthy story. Genesis 6 through 9, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Let's turn to Genesis 6. Genesis 6 this morning. And let's read verses 5 through 8 as a starter. 5 through 8. And just any one of you, just go ahead and read that.
The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the ground, man and beast, and creeping things, and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord.
Okay, thank you. Look at verse 6 again. Verse 6. What do you suppose that verse means? Anybody just kind of tell me what you think that word, tell us what you think that verse means. Verse 6.
I'll give it an ecological. He was okay. Sorry that man was kind of destroying the things of nature.
Okay.
Or maybe he was.
Okay.
That's maybe far-fetched.
Not at all. No, that's either directly or indirectly this was happening. Any other thoughts on that? The whole business of what it says in verse 6. Anything out of that verse jump out at you that you want to expound on or share with us?
Okay. It's kind of off on a tangent, but it's pretty difficult. It's a mystery to me to understand how an omnipotent God could then be sorry.
Any thoughts on that? Let's pull some of that out here. There are 30 different times in the Old Testament where it says God was sorry that he did this, that God did this. Okay, comments on that? Yeah.
But he also gave us a choose.
Okay.
God.
All right, God gave us freedom and we don't always choose wisely. Other thoughts on that? that business of God being sorry. Anything that sheds light on that for us today? Yeah.
Well, I think that's what the greatest thing has been being a parent, is I've really learned what God would feel like at times. That brings the humanness. When Christ came as a human, came down so that he could understand. And then there's that forgiveness. You know, you forgive your children over and over again, and that's really learned what God would feel like on.
Yeah. Ah, none of you ever felt, of course, you ever never even entertained the feeling as you observed your offspring and their antics. I just wish you hadn't been born. I wish I hadn't done this. And but none of you have ever felt that way, of course, so you wouldn't understand that. Okay. All right. Other thoughts about this?
It would be hard to think that you'd be pleased with how we behaved down there.
Okay. Okay. All right. Other thoughts? Okay. This is a term that it puzzles us, and yet it brings us back to the point where God does deal with us in a rather direct and flexible kind of way. We're not just robots hanging on some strings. There's a kind of a thing there that goes on with us as creatures who have the ability to do things that God does not want us to do. We're the ones that screwed it up. You say, yeah, okay, Bob.
There's a parallel flood story in the book of Gilgamesh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there it's a polytheistic culture, and I forget how the flood arose there, but it was sort of more just almost a play of the gods or random fate. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I vaguely remember something about it. There are many in ancient literature, a lot of different flood stories that come out of these different religions and cultures. That's right. It's a very and then the Bible has its own unique flood story, which gears into the one God who has this special relationship with the people. That'd be another whole interesting study to go into that, Bob. I'm not equipped to do it, but it would be interesting to do that. Yeah.
Just the thought that indicates that this probably may have been a flood, literally a flood then.
Yeah.
And this was the ancient Jewish way of understanding it.
Sure.
That the man had been bad.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Divine grief here. I'll blot out all human beings that I've created. And the verb for blot out is, in Hebrew, is a very strong word meaning to wipe out. Just to wipe it away, to do away with it completely. And it's used in two very different ways in the Old Testament. One way it's used is that of complete destruction of a person or a group. And it's found in Deuteronomy and Judges also in that way. But it's also used, that very same verb is also used to describe the forgiveness of sins. How God blots out, is completely wipes out our sins.
What is that word?
The word is, let's see if I can put it up here. I think, you read some Hebrew here. I'll see if I can do it right. I'm not sure what the vowels would be. Probably something like that. Maha, something like that. But anyway, I may not have it exactly right, but it's something like that. It starts with an M sound anyway. Does that sound familiar to you?
But that's blots out sins.
Yeah, blots out, completely wipe out. It's according to the commentary that I read anyway. And I suppose we should ask ourselves a question, at least in passing here, what connection is there between human wickedness nowadays and the possible blotting out of all life, including plants and animals, in our time? It's something to think about.
It's something to worry about, because God in the Old Testament promised he will not destroy by water again, but he didn't say he wouldn't destroy by other things.
Yeah.
Fire or something like that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe we're doing that to ourselves.
Okay. Yeah.
Reaping the.
Sure. The comment being made here that it's something not only to think about, but to worry about. And even though God promised that there would be no more destruction by water, it could be some other way, pollution or whatever. Well, anyway, Noah, in this, we're in chapter 6. We're looking at chapter 6 now of Noah, of Genesis. The Genesis story running chapters 6 through 9, and just picking out a few pieces to look at today. Verses 5 through 8 we're looking at, and especially verse 6, which talks about how God was sorry to have made humankind, and it grieved him to his heart, and he will blot out this whole civilization. Noah is an interesting character. Everything is on the road to destruction. This is the way everything is moving. It's a dismal story of pain, and there's lots of suffering and evil, and it's just really a bleak sort of thing. But there's a person all of a sudden who appears who embodies a new possibility. There's something good can come out of this. Scripture presents Noah as against the main flow of destruction that's going on here. Presents Noah as against the main flow of the culture. In the middle of all of this announcement of flood and death and destruction, it says, but Noah. But Noah. You see that? But Noah found favor in this troubled exchange that God is having between God and the creation. There's a prospect here of a fresh alternative. Aha! Something new can happen, God says. And so Noah represents a minority view of life. He represents, in a whole culture which is full of faithlessness and evil, he represents faith and faithfulness. And so all of a sudden, already in the beginning of this flood story, we have a glimmer of hope. We have the gospel sort of beginning to peek out at us here. And so we want to keep that in mind as we go through this. Okay, now what I'd like to have you do, Noah was chosen. If I can get this thing upright, hang it up. I put some questions on a newsprint here. I'd like to have you get together in small groups of 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever and talk about this for a few minutes. Decides to wipe out humans to save the planet, why would God choose you to survive and help restore the creation? And the second question, Noah was called to save all the animals. His response was an act of faith. What is one way you might respond by faith to be part of God's plan to save animals in our time? We're trying to tie this together with the Bible now. Ecology isn't just some topic out in left field. This comes out of Scripture. We're talking about how this whole thing comes out of the Bible. And so get together now in your small groups of 3 or 4 or whatever, and we'll take about 3, 4 minutes, 5 minutes maybe to talk about this, and then we'll come back to share for the rest of us. Personalize it, say, now, all of a sudden, if I'm the one, why would God do that? Why? What is there about me that God would see that would drive God to pick me to do this? And then, share what, you know, just assume that every one of you might be the person, okay? Every one of you might be the person. And if so, what characteristics is it that I'd have that would make God choose me like that? All right, let's see what kinds of insights. We have a lot to teach each other in this group. We have in this group resources that are just incredible. And so that's why we just need to somehow get your ideas out here. So let's start with this one. If human wickedness gets to the point where an environment is being destroyed and God decides to wipe out humans and save the planet, why would God choose you to survive and restore the creation? Okay, what came out of this group?
If God has chosen me, he must see in me a person that's going to respond to his wishes.
Okay, a person who's going to respond to his wishes, okay?
Could
other?
Be anybody here.
Anybody in the group here.
No, but what I mean is he could choose anyone.
Yeah, everybody.
And he would give them the strength to carry it through.
Yes.
Because there were so many in the Bible that didn't want to do what he said.
Okay.
But they did it because he gave them strength.
That's right. That's another reason, isn't it, that God would do that? Because God would
anybody
give you...
Here could.
Anybody, everyone, yes. God can give you the strength to do it. Okay.
We went over the Moses story, and then Moses said, why me? He was reluctant to take on that role.
Uh-huh.
And then God said, I will be with you.
Right. Right. To dare to be against the culture, to be the counter one, to do something that's special. Yes, God can give us the power. Okay, other ideas that came out of this group? Well, let's go on to the next one so we don't... So we save some ideas for the rest of them here. Okay. Okay, the next group over here. One back in the corner there. Any answers to this one? Anybody?
Well, I guess we talked about he probably would choose us. You know, one of us or all of us, because we've been so environmental conscious and we've been trying to really preserve his creation.
Okay.
I felt really close. Maybe he saw that in us and he would be able
okay.
to carry out.
Okay, because God might choose you because God sees here's someone who is sensitive to the creation as part of it, and know that God cares about that. Okay? All right, this group. This large group here. Did you single out anybody?
We were two groups.
Oh, you were two groups here. Okay. First of all, this group then. Yeah. Anybody? Anything else in addition? You don't have to. Maybe it's already been said. Okay. Anything in addition to what's been said? Over here?
We didn't really get to talk about this what if and why. We were talking about other things.
Huh? My goodness. All right, that's the way it goes sometimes. All right. Well, let's give your group a first chance on the second question. Did you get to the second question?
No.
Okay, you had your own agenda. All right. Noah was called to save all the animals. His response was an act of faith. What is one way you might respond by faith to be part of God's plan to save animals in our time? Any insights that came out of your group? For this one, I want to just put them up on the board here. Let's list a few of those. This is kind of like brainstorming, I think, the second one. What is one way you might respond by faith to be part of God's plan to save animals in our time? Just
by feeling responsible.
By feeling responsible, okay. Okay, all right. Other thoughts that came out of your group? Things that you might do by faith? Over here. Okay. One way you might respond to be part of God's plan to save animals in our time. Over here.
During hunting seasons.
Okay, what about hunting season?
Well, I think that the animals get too thick. They should be protected and degraded, but they also be
uh-huh. Okay.
We don't die of rabies and starvation.
Okay. To do our hunting in the most humane kind of way. Okay? All right. All right.
So absolutely forbid hunting of endangered species.
And forbid, okay. And forbid. What are some of the endangered species that we might, that people are tempted to hunt?
We've practically exterminated the wolf from the lower 48 states.
Okay.
There's said to be a few in the northern Cascades in Washington. Great one.
Okay. Okay, all right.
Protecting animals from suffering in medical research.
Okay. This whole, the whole issue of medical research. Again, a humane kind of approach.
Saving all of the old growth forests, because a lot of animals and birds depend upon the old growth forests, like the spotted owl, that's another.
Okay.
Is there going to be some point we can debate some of these?
Oh yeah, we feel free, you know, we can just take the time to debate. Yeah.
Supporting retraining of people whose livelihood is wiped out by conservation.
Okay.
Such as the loggers that are displaced by the old growth forest.
We've eliminated about 90% of the northwest old growth forest. Al Gore, the speech I heard, said that in 10 years, if we continue cutting, there will be none, so there'll be no jobs anyway, so we'll have to start retraining now and preserve 10% of our old growth forest, or retrain 10 years from now and have no old growth forest left.
Yeah. Yeah, what a debate you can get into on some of these things. It's just, you can really get into some great debates on these. Okay.
There is. Yeah. This isn't to save animals. We slaughter a lot of animals in this country for food.
Yeah.
But humane ways of slaughtering.
Right. Humane ways of slaughtering. Right.
Go lower on the food chain like they do at Holden Village to a vegetarian.
Lower on the food chain. Okay. All right. We're right on. We're getting some of these. Exactly what I wanted to get up here. Yeah.
Cats and dogs. I've got kind of a thing of that. I live on a farm, so I have a lot of cats, but I do think birth control somehow for cats and dogs is very essential. People buy millions of dollars of cat food and dog food, and sometimes then when they don't want them, they dump them out in the country.
You find a few of them get dropped off out there, huh?
And you know, that's terrible.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the whole business of cats and dogs. Okay. How do we deal with that whole thing, and the whole business of pets? We may talk about that a little bit more too. Other ways, other answers to this, other brainstorming on this. Be part of God's plan.
I would go with the Native American way of seeing the animals as our brothers and sisters, rather than kind of a Western European way of seeing animals as sort of. Having no souls. The Native Americans, each animal had a soul, a deer soul. So that doesn't mean they didn't hunt and kill animals for food, but they respected them and prayed for their soul.
Okay, to see animals as brothers and sisters, and of course St. Francis. We'll talk about St. Francis in a little bit too. All right, any other, anything else that wants to, that you want to bring out on this?
I would like to. A lot of habitat was destroyed in the late 70s by farming fence to fence.
Okay.
In Iowa, at least.
Okay, all right. That's related to save old growth forests and farmland. And habitat for wildlife and wetlands and that whole business. Okay, good.
I thought a great deal about this old growth forest and saving the spotted owl. I'm not against saving the spotted owl, but I think there is a point beyond which, if we are more interested in saving some of the animals at the expense of jobs for a lot of people, I think there is an argument on that side, and I tend to listen to that argument more and more.
Uh-huh. Now we could get a good debate going here, I can see that. Okay, all right.
Spend more money on trying to save some of these species than they would ever put to feed the hungry children.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to reply?
Snails and some of that. I have a hard time with that. Children are starving throughout the world, and they can't have any money to give for that, but they have it for research.
Okay. All right, now we aren't going to probably convince each other of anything, but let's have a little argument on that. Let's just pull out a few here. It'll take about three, four minutes and do that. Over there, and then over here, and then over there, okay.
I guess before the arguments get too deep, I want to talk about, these scriptures talk about faith and God and control. It's a very complex problem.
Okay.
And that people will be hurt, but we need to be very sensitive, because we've been involved in losing our job 5 times because schools had to be consolidated. It has made us very sensitive.
Okay.
And you need to then minister unto those people. What you experience sometimes when you go through that, everybody ignores you. Like the problem is there. And I think we as God's people have to be sensitive to those conditions.
All right. To be.
That people are going to hurt.
Okay. To be sensitive to the complexity of the issue and also to be sensitive to the people who are going to be hurt by whichever side, in this whole thing. Okay, Jenny?
I think one thing we have to think about is, in my business, one of the rules is first do no harm. And I think most of these, snail biters and spotted owls and things of that sort were not endangered by their natural environment. They were endangered by the changes that we make in that environment. And I think there's a different level of responsibility for things we've created than for things that just sort of happen.
Interesting. Okay, a different responsibility for things that we've created than things that just sort of happen. Okay, all right. Other comments here?
I think there has to be a compromise somewhere. If we don't save the species, there isn't going to be anything left. And the same thing in the Everglades, they're being destroyed by over-fertilization in the sugar cane industries down there.
Okay.
And there aren't going to be a lot of birds or anything left, but we have to save them.
We have to, somehow it's complex, you say, we have to figure out some ways of saving part of this as well as being sensitive to people's needs. Mm-hmm. Okay, Bob?
Trees and forests, the Indians say, are the lungs of the earth. And that's scientific too. That's oxygen that's given out, I think, carbon dioxide. We're creating a greenhouse warming effect, and we may exterminate ourselves to preserve some kinds of jobs or other kinds of jobs, like planting trees, restoring forests, restoring watersheds. They did that to plant it during the FDR's civilian
CCC.
Conservation.
Uh-huh. New jobs can be created restore the environment, too.
Why do you have to plant trees? Why not plant them?
Okay. All right. Couple more arguments here, and then we'll go on. Anybody else?
I think, too, and I've said that in a way. Middle ground is, I think, tends to be the place we need to land finally in the resolution of a lot of these. And some of them are not going to be resolved. But the middle ground is probably the place where both interests are going to be served somewhat.
Somehow to find the middle ground. That's a challenge. One more comment here, and then we'll have to go on.
I think if we have caring management, the whole process to care for all the individuals and entities that are involved, and I think that, from my perspective, certainly that human beings would be, they are created in the image of God. And they have the dominion. We have the responsibility to have that caring management over all the rest of it.
Uh-huh.
And the first responsibility to human beings after all alternatives have been considered.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Sally McFaig puts it in a very neat way when she says that we are dependent on, human species are dependent on all these other species for life. If they go out of existence, we're done for. So that makes us less important. We're not so important. We're fellow creatures with all of this. But at the same time, we have been given the responsibility. We have the awesome task and responsibility and importance of seeing that this doesn't happen. So you have the two things you hold in tension there. Well, let's get on now to another piece of this chapter, and so we can get toward winding it up. the story of Noah. Genesis 9. Let's look at Genesis 9. You know the story in between. I don't have to tell you that. The flood, the end of the flood. They get out of the ark. They build an altar and worship God. And then some things happen here at the end in Genesis 9. The first few verses of Genesis 9, verses 1 through 6, we won't read that right now. I'm embarrassed that I'd forgotten yesterday that this is where Jenny points out that this is where we first start eating meat. This is where God first tells. I knew it, and for some reason I had my Genesis 3 in my mind. But anyway, it was Genesis 9 after the flood that God says, "Okay, go ahead now and eat the animals." But let's get on to the next section, verses 8 through 17. And let's just read through that, because it's we want to be sure to have enough time at least to read this. Would one of you like to read 8 through 17?
Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "Behold, I establish my covenant with you and your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. I establish my covenant with you, that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I will make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you, for all future generations. I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will look upon it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth." God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant which I will establish between me and all flesh that is upon the earth."
Okay, thank you. And we have this covenant now. This covenant between just God and humans, right?
No.
Did any of you ever take a pencil or a pen and underline all of the phrases in here that say, "And with every living creature, the birds, the domestic animals, and every animal of the earth, I establish my covenant with all flesh, my covenant between you and every living creature that is with you, my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature and of all flesh, my covenant between me and all flesh." Isn't that, look at that. That is, whenever you find this kind of repetition in the Bible, what does that tell you?
Important.
Something is terribly, terribly important. That is just a literary device used here to tell us something that is so easy to ignore, so easy to miss that. That's a challenge for us to recognize that. Do you think animals go to heaven?
No.
Yes?
Doesn't,
you don't know? Doesn't matter? We could go into some interesting debates on that too.
Depends upon what you mean by go to heaven.
Yeah. Okay. St. Francis of Assisi is a person that had the feeling that it's possible that animals could go to heaven. But at any rate, he treated animals very, very special, as you know. Any little stories that any of you remember about St. Francis? You know, lots of legends about him. He didn't write a lot. We have the prayer by St. Francis that's in the Lutheran Book of Worship and probably could have been used today in our Bible study. I won't do it, but it's there. Not a lot of stuff that he wrote, though.
I have something that he wrote, right?
Do you? Oh, yeah. The Canticle of the Sun? Do you have the Canticle of the Sun?
Pardon?
You have the Canticle of the Sun?
No, it's from something called I, Francis.
Oh, okay. I have that book at home. I haven't read it, but I've got it at home. He did write some things, but like Jesus, he's known more by what he did and the stories about him than about some profound theological treatises. He didn't do a lot of that kind of thing.
Like the one where he says, "Lord, make me an instrument."
Yeah, that's the famous prayer of Saint Francis, right? Yeah.
I'll be with you.
While you're looking for that, there's a story about St. Francis and the cricket. Anybody remember that? He's praying. He's out there praying in the garden one day, and this cricket starts making all kinds of racket. And, you know, he doesn't walk over and stamp on the cricket so he can have some more quiet so he can pray. What does he do? He goes and gets the cricket and sets it over here by him, and he tells the cricket, now you keep go ahead and making your kinds of supplications and whatever kind of prayers it is that you're saying there, and I'll pray my prayers, and we'll just keep praying together. A lot of stories like that about St. Francis. Go ahead.
Okay, my handwriting is so poor, I have trouble reading.
Do your best.
Okay. I Francis, this is saying a bit his. I had the impression that I had never seen a single thing before, and I understood the psalm meant they have eyes but never see, Psalm 115. I had not seen. Yes, now I saw the sun, the moon, the earth, the springs, the flowers. I had not seen them before. They had passed me by, taken for granted. They might as well have been landscape. I had merely gaped at them as one gapes at strangers. But now they spoke to me. I felt near them. I loved them. They moved me. In fact, I did not cease to weep when I beheld a sunset or the meadows covered with poppies and lilies. Everything seemed new to me, ever new, and as light entered my eyes, it transformed itself into joy within my heart. I think my first real prayers were said at that time. Thanks to the sky, thanks to the earth, thanks to life, thanks to God. Who was God for me? Oh, it is difficult to answer that.
Okay, thank you. And then St. Francis thought of animals and plants and all of creation as being sacramental. We talk about the real presence of Christ in the sacrament. Francis believed that in these animals we also had a real presence of Christ, in a sense, could meet Christ in these animals and
was
plants.
Was he vegetarian?
I don't know. Was Francis vegetarian? Anybody know?
Probably. The monasteries were.
Monasteries were?
Most of them. But I'm not sure of that specifically.
Sorry, I don't know the answer to that.
Very poor, so.
Yeah, very poor. Yeah, he ate low on the food chain, very likely. I'm not sure if he was that. But he made a big thing of that. He was not a pantheist. He was careful about that. Did not worship the creation, but worshiped with the creation and had a sense of a sense of the presence of God in the creation. Real presence of Christ, and we talk about shalom a lot. We talk about shalom as the condition where human beings have great respect for each other and have come to have a redemptive and a wonderful kind of relationship with each other. And Francis was instrumental in trying to help us see that this shalom extends to all of creation. That this redemptive and restorative relationship is not only between humans, but also with the creation. And a quick thing here on Matthew Fox. Anybody ever heard of Matthew Fox?
Yes.
Probably have. Somebody interviewed him and asked him one day, I once heard you say that your dog is your spiritual director. His answer, it's true. It's this very theme that I've been talking about. Who teaches us to play again when we're getting too serious? Who teaches us the basic law of wonder and thanksgiving for being here? My dog enters into ecstasy without guilt, and that's very important. He's close to the earth, and he knows his interdependence with Mother Earth. He teaches me these things. A lot of peace and justice activists think it's a scandal to have pets. You have to save the two-legged ones first, they say. But that's missing the point. Creation itself has to be redeemed together. That's what Romans 8 is about. All of creation is groaning for redemption, not just the two-legged ones. Well, you could react to that. We could get into some more arguments about what you do with pets.
St. Matthew Fox was excommunicated from Catholic Church.
Right. Yeah, he's a little too radical. St. Francis also has never really made it. His theology has never become mainstream because they felt that he's too much interested in the creation and not enough interested in just humans. But We're taking a second look at some of this stuff, and maybe don't agree with all of what they say, but there's something here. Yeah.
We talk only about parts of God's creation that are mobile. You haven't talked anything about plants.
Good question.
And you see, we could all, if we would negate all eating of flesh, for instance, can we eat up the vegetation to the point we don't have that either? There's more than one way of looking at it.
Very interesting, yes.
We eat less vegetation if we didn't eat meat, because it takes about 10 times as much vegetation to produce a pound of meat as a pound of grain.
Okay. That's true. A very good question. I was going to raise a question too. Why did God save the animals and not save the plants in the flood?
But if the animals run rampant, for instance, there's a possibility they could eat themselves out of house and home.
Yeah,
we've seen that happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, in the old days, predators took care of that.
Okay. Well, there's some things we could really get into there. I was narrowing our focus on just animal rights today, but we could talk about the fact that we need to relate all of this stuff too. It all does tie in, and I'm just sorry we don't have more time to get into it. I just need to close us up here quick. I never got to the God in the chicken coop. a discussion on how chickens are produced and how they're fattened. But that's another whole issue. Animal research needs a leash. That's a neat title for an article on that topic. But let's close on a note of hope here, folks. We don't want to go out of here with just some kind of feeling that everything is wrong. We need to talk about what we in our churches can do. I mean, we may not want to do what they do at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, have an animal blessing ceremony every year. That's a possibility to highlight the importance of the animals. But what can we do in our congregations? We should talk about that maybe a little bit. But don't. I mean, think about it. And we need to also remember our New Testament theology that in Christ we have hope. That where sin abounded, grace abounded even more. And that's not just a New Testament concept, because that's really the whole meaning of the Noah story. Where sin abounded, grace abounded even more. And the meaning of the rainbow. This is the message of Jesus Christ. That we have hope. Remember that, yes, Francis did fail to communicate to the church in such a way that they picked up his theology, lock, stock, and barrel. They put him off in a corner. We need to keep looking at him, though, even though we may not agree completely. Let's close with this prayer of the donkey. O God, who made me to trudge along the road always, to carry heavy loads always, and to be beaten always, give me great courage and gentleness. One day, let somebody understand me that I may no longer want to weep because I can never say what I mean and they make fun of me. Let me find a juicy thistle and make them give me time to pick it. And, oh God, one day, let me find again my little brother of the Christmas crib. Amen. Thanks for coming. Have a good day. Time for coffee.
What is your time tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow. Tomorrow we are moving on to. Tomorrow is tech study. Yes, the village pastor will meet here with you at 9 o'clock, and we'll study the text for next Sunday, so he can get some help for his sermon. And then on Friday we go on with these, and we're going to Leviticus 25. It's called Blue Laws and the Greening of the Church. In other words, what is the Sabbath? What's the Sabbath all about? In Leviticus 25. What can the Sabbath tell us? How can the Sabbath, the whole concept of Sabbath rest, Sabbath year, all this business, how can that be helpful for us in the business of ecology and saving the creation?